Hi, my name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really want to talk a little bit about the ninth step tonight, but we'll see how that works out. I have all these concepts. You know, I was thinking about it. It feels like I have a million concepts that I want to sort of bring out to y'all and wrap my arms around and organize them and fix them and give it to you in some sort of great, organized, understandable, digestible fashion. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that it was an impossible task. It just wasn't going to happen. And so rather than in any way make myself nervous about it, I said, oh well, and I just did what I do most of the time, and that is I'm just going to talk about what I'm going to talk about, and you guys are going to have to figure it out. So, this a lot of stuff is from the Big Book. I'm going to do a lot of stuff from the 12 and 12. I'm just going to read you stuff from the Big Book and the 12 and 12. You know, this isn't... This is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, by the way. I'm going to read you stuff from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I'm going to do, because I trust you guys to figure it out, to put it together. I think that people that one of the beauties about AA is nobody's shoving stuff down your throat. Nobody's telling you what you got to believe. There's only one individual in here. There's only one entity in here which will hurt you, and that's alcohol, and that's basically designed it's really designed to hurt the people that aren't going to end up doing this stuff. You know, really, that's the penalty for not doing this stuff, either drinking alcohol or just living a miserable existence. And eventually, the people who are going to figure this out are going to figure it out, and I'm just going to throw out these concepts. And I happen to think they all relate to the ninth step. But of course, I'm crazy. I think everything relates to the third step, and all that relates to the 11th step, and it all relates to the first step. So they're all related. So I'm just going to talk about a couple of things. It's going to be sort of like Pulp Fiction. It's not going to be in order. I might start in the middle and the beginning and whatever. You know, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol, right? That's what it says. Look, this stuff I'm going to say is not my opinion. I'm going to give you some opinion stuff, probably. I don't think so. I like to think it's not opinion. But some stuff I'm going to quote right out of the Big Book, so there's no arguing about it. Although your alcoholic should say, I just don't buy that, but that's fine. But men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol, right? He says we're restless, irritable, and discontented unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable. So what's the opposite of restless? Somebody give me a word. I was thinking about these things. I should have taken time to look this stuff up. I just didn't do it. Peaceful.
Tranquil.
Enthusiastic. Some sort of junkie back there that's stuck in. It's a dope fiend that stuck in that box. I think if you're restless, it means you got to be somewhere all the time. I think you're more like peaceful. You know, my sponsor used to say to me, you know, Joe Stein used to say, whenever I go crazy, he says, hey, Russell, be still. There's a line out of the song that says, be still and know that I'm God. Just relax. It's all under control. You know, be still. You know, to be still, to be peaceful. Okay, so restless, irritable. What would be the opposite of irritable?
Cheerful.
I don't know. What do you think? Yeah, that's the opposite of irritable? Content. Yeah, but then you got a problem with and discontented. What's the opposite?
Rational.
That's sort of like, okay. Well, whatever the deal is, I think if you're not going to drink and live a decent life around here, whatever should be going on in your life should cause you to have the exact opposite of that restless, irritable, discontent stuff. So here's my theory. If being restless, irritable, and discontent is the reason why alcoholics drink, if they're not restless, irritable, and discontent, then they have no reason to drink. Does that make any sense to anybody but me? Okay? So the key is to be whatever that is, whatever you want to call it, to be that way all the time. That's the deal, to be that way all the time. So, you know, and the 12 and 12 says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. Of true happiness, he'll know none at all. So you got to understand the consequences of your alcoholism and all its consequences. It's not just drinking. Because what we say in the Big Book about Alcoholics Anonymous is drinking is not even the disease. Do you know that? Drinking is not the disease. Drinking is a symptom of the disease. The disease is much deeper than drinking. Now, if you really want to try to figure out what the disease is, you have to go to another part of the book where it says, It says selfishness, self-centeredness. Right? That's the root. That's the centerpiece. Let's get the exact quote so I don't screw this thing up. So let's look at what's going on. And this, here's the crazy thing. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Listen, and that has nothing to do with drinking. As a matter of fact, that deal operates when you're not drinking. Sometimes it operates even better when you're not drinking. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven, I think that's like we're driven. We don't have a choice. There's like no choice. It's not like you get up in the morning and you say, well, I got a choice on how to feel. I have a choice on how to handle traffic. I have a choice on how to handle this bounced check. See, alcoholics, my understanding of alcoholism is, not only did I not have a choice as to whether to drink or not, I didn't even have a choice as to whether how to feel or not. If a check was bounced, if somebody cut in front of me, if something happened that went against me, I had no choice. I was man without choice. There was going to be anger, there was going to be rage, there was going to be negativity, there was going to be gossiping, there was going to be character assassination. If you came up to me and even tried to argue anything spiritual, I would say what we all say, but you don't understand. I would just counter that with, I'm different, you don't understand, it doesn't make any sense, because my alcoholic life, which means the way I think, the way I react to things, makes absolute sense to me. It's the only normal life for me. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that sometime in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So, you know, unless we get a hold on this deal, the selfishness, the self-centeredness, we're dead. And you know what the book says? It says we can't do it without God. That's what they say. They say it says we can't do, we had to have God's help. We had to have God's help. Now, I got a call on the way up here from a guy who was referred by a psychologist who knows me. He's a friend of mine, 34 years old, has a drinking problem. And nice guy, nice enough guy. And he spoke to me and he said to call him about an alcohol problem and everything. Now, I know. He said it wasn't that bad, you know, but I know alcoholics lie. I know when a man who doesn't know another man calls up a stranger and says, I'm calling up because I think I have a drinking problem. I know there's devastating things going on in his life. Right. Even though he says it's not that much of a problem because nobody calls up anybody and says, I have a drink, but I need some help unless you're crumbling. You know what I mean? And so he says, and I said, well, about a meeting. I tried to get him up here. I can't make it up. He says, well, tomorrow morning at 9:30, we have a meeting at Oak Hill Presbyterian Church. He says, okay, I'll go. He says, but he's never been to AA before. He says, but I don't really want to go to any place where they're going to talk about God. Now, let me tell you something. I know you think it's funny. The guys in the car driving up with me thought it was funny, too. You know, that I should get this phone call. I think they were somewhat surprised. I had a nice conversation with him. I did. And the conversation basically said, he said, I know that's what A is about. The first step says you're powerless and you're powerless over alcohol and you believe in God or something like that. I said, no. I said, the first step says you're powerless over alcohol and you believe your life is unmanageable. I said, you're barely at that one because you're not even sure you have a drinking problem or you haven't lost a lot of stuff. I said, trust me, once you get to the first step, well, you'll know when you get to the first step. Because when you get to the first step, the third step doesn't seem like big a deal. You know what I mean? Yeah, it doesn't. You know, because when you get to the first step, you're not really worried about the God stuff. You know what I mean? You only worry about the God stuff before you get to the first step. You know? So I said, I can't explain that. I said, look, there's going to be 25 guys at this meeting. I said, I can't promise you that not one of them is going to like mention the Creator or mention God or something like that. I said, you can talk about anything you want to talk about. You know what I'm talking about? But, you know, the bottom line is, and we had a little more of a discussion, because I'm a little, I got to be honest, you know, love and tolerance is our code, and I'm a little bit more loving and tolerant to people, and because I was that way, who come in here and don't want to jump on the guy, and I understand that deal. It's guys with 12 and 15 years that I have a problem with, that haven't apparently read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous or know what I'm probably, that's the guys I have a problem with, but in any event, but of course that's my problem, right? So if I go, so it says, this is how why first we had to quit playing God. So the bottom line is that, you know, so I invited him. Hopefully, he's going to come to this meeting. So I got this thing going on in my life, this selfishness, this self-centeredness, and very often I don't see it. It's really a horrible, horrible thing. Easter Sunday was last Sunday, so it's Easter Sunday. I've sponsored this one guy for about 20 years now, and he's never been sober more than 3-4 months. And it's a long story. So that doesn't even matter. You know, I'm not going to talk about what he's been through, what's going on with him, because he's got some sort of special circumstances. But the nature of, you know, when you've been sponsoring people for 27 years, you sponsor a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And you sponsor people that stay sober. I got guys I've sponsored that have stayed sober for 27 years. I guys I've sponsored who've got like, you know, 2 months now. You know, it's funny. I got guys sponsored who have 8 years. I got guys sponsored who just started drinking. You got them all over the board. You know, you love them all. But this particular guy, you know, hasn't been able to stay sober. And I hate to say the words, probably will never get sober. And I won't say that because, you know, I believe in God. But, you know, the bottom line is, if you understand the circumstances, there's mental problems. There's a lot of other stuff going on. But he did something. But Sunday morning he did something. He does this quite often. Now, actually, I get a lot out of sponsoring this guy. His mother can't believe that because I learn a lot about myself. You know, he'll call me up anywhere from 3 to 5 times a day. He always says the same thing to me. Most of the guys I sponsor know who he is, you know what I mean? Because they're there when the phone calls come through. And he calls me up and he says this. He says, so what's happening? I said, nothing. I'm in the meeting. I said, I'm watching TV. He says, what are you watching? Watching whatever I'm watching. He says, oh. Then nothing more. He says, you know, I'm on this pain medication, and I don't think they're giving me the right stuff, you know? And I said, whatever his name is, Joe. I said, Joe, listen, I really don't have, whatever it is, we have a conversation, 5 minutes. And I can really sort of tell how I'm doing based upon how I handle it, you know what I mean? You know, he's really good for me because, let me tell you something, there are times he's perfect for me. God has put this guy in my life because there are times, I've got to be honest with you, there are times I say, I have really blown up at him. You can imagine there are times he calls precisely the wrong moment at the wrong time, and I say, and I'll say, you know, you're a bastard. You know what I mean? Don't ever call me again. I'll say something, or I'll be the nicest guy in the world. I'll say, well, God bless you, whatever, and everything like that. And they're all things in between. Based upon how I handle it, I get to see how I'm doing. Now, no matter what I say, now let me tell you something, no matter what I say to this guy, I can say, I hate you, don't ever call me, I'm going to kill you, your mother, your parents, I hate your guts. There's a call coming an hour later. You know what I mean? Like it never happens. I mean, there's no risk in actually offending them, you know. So it's Easter morning at 7 o'clock, and I'm not really the greatest sleeper in the world. I mean, some of you guys on our email list know you get those emails at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. So Easter Sunday, I was sending out emails like at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had to be in church. You know, I'm a deacon over my church. They were having Easter Sunday stuff and all that sort of stuff. And probably for the first time in 18 years, I was like really into that deep REM sleep, you know what I mean? And it's at 6 o'clock in the morning, the phone rings. 6 o'clock in the morning, the phone rings on Easter Sunday. Now, I want you to trust me. Now no sane person would call up anybody at 6 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, anywhere, or any Sunday, you know, Easter Sunday, anywhere. But I want to, you're going to have to trust me when I tell you, I've actually told this person a million times, don't call me up like at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning. Don't call me up. I mean, if there's a true emergency, people can call me up, but I mean, don't do that. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, now I am barely awake. I can't believe it's raining. I don't know what it is. It's some emergency. And I pick up the phone. And, you know, once I wake up, I'm one of these guys, once I wake up, I ain't going back to sleep again. And I pick up the phone, and I say, hello? And this is what I hear. I said, so what's happening? And this is what I said on Easter Sunday morning. I'm a believer too. I said, the first words out of my mouth was, Jesus Christ. Which is probably appropriate on Easter morning, okay? Now my sponsor, who's a Baptist preacher, and he's 53 years sober, whenever I or anybody says Jesus Christ, you know what he said? Now, how would you like to have a sponsor like this? If he hears me or anybody else says Jesus or Jesus Christ, he immediately looks at me and says, where? I mean, I swear, this is what this guy does, you know? 53 years sober, and somebody will say, Jesus Christ, he says, where? Because he's like living in expectation, you know? He doesn't want to miss him, you know what I mean? Where? You know? To get a hold of sponsors like that, they give you images and stuff of things you say that, you know, sort of cancel. Where, you know? He doesn't say, don't say that, or it's wrong. He says, where? Where is it? You know what I mean? So I said, Jesus Christ. I said, you bastard. That's what I said. Look, I'm not proud of it. And I'm not even that ashamed of it. You know, I'm just reporting. You know what I mean? And I hung up. I said, don't call me again. And I hung up the phone. That was it. But after I thought about it, I said, well, you know, this makes for a great meeting. Because this sort of explains the deal. Because I'm saying to myself, what causes a person to call up somebody at 6 o'clock in the morning, Easter morning, and say, so what's happening? You know, I think in every human being, there's got to be something. I don't know what you would call it, a conscience, or there's got to be something in every human being, inbred, that somehow, some way, I don't know what it's called, I don't know what it is, a soul, I don't know what it is, that somehow, some way, allows you to, in some small way, feel for the other person. Actually look at the other person like he's another person. And before you do anything or say anything, something deep down inside that says, if I was him or her, I wouldn't want somebody to do that to me. And whatever that thing is that's inside of every human being, that probably stops some people from doing crazy stuff to other people and hurting them. It stops you from making calls at 3 o'clock in the morning. It stops you from doing outrageous things. It stops you from bouncing checks or lying and stealing. It stops you from doing stuff because you have a something that's inside of you that sort of, I don't know what it is, but it's something inside of you that allows you to get a glimpse into what the other person feels like, as opposed to being totally overwhelmed on what you want to do and what you feel like. And then I realized that this guy wasn't doing anything more than I've done with people a million times when I was drinking. Whatever that thing is in human beings, and I think that's the nature, part of the nature of real alcoholism, which is besides the drinking, where they talk about the selfishness and the self-centeredness is the root of our problems. You see, what he did was selfish to the extreme. As an alcoholic, it shouldn't even surprise me. I said, you know, if I told him, I said, well, he's an alcoholic. That's what we do. But when you think about it, because he's missing something, there is something missing in him where he doesn't even get it. Not only doesn't he get it as he's doing it, if I was to say to him, even afterwards, I trust me, if I was to say to him, you know, you called at 6 o'clock in the morning, he would say to me, I don't understand what you're so angry about. He wouldn't get it even if it was explained to him with a map. With a map. He would say, you don't understand. He would just get mad and go away. And you know something? This guy's in an insane asylum. He's literally locked up in an insane asylum. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't think his actions, his reactions, his feelings are any different than 99.9% of the alcoholics I run into in Alcoholics Anonymous or active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think whatever that deal is going on in him is going on with people that come into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and that's the true alcoholism. That's the true selfishness and the self-centeredness. Whatever that thing God implants in us that we had, which allows you to actually see what you're doing or how you're doing or what you're acting to the other person, is totally wiped out and it's all about you. It's all 100% about you. It's just wiped out. It's just not even there. You know, and if anything, what my years in Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me, and of course, since I'm a believer and I believe in the God concept, and when they talk about an AA, I think this is done through the transformation of the spirit that it talks about in the book. It says, if we stay close to it, if we being all power, he will give us everything we need if we stay close to him and do his work well. It says right here in chapter 5, it says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing. On what footing? staying close to him, doing his work well, established on that footing, not on doing what we want to do or thinking about ourselves, established on his footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. You know, I know why he called me. I know exactly why he called me, because I've done it before. He called me because he wanted to call me. Makes sense to me. It's 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, he feels like calling me. He's got a bug up his ass. He wants to talk to somebody. He just picked up the phone. He didn't even say, hi, how you doing? He says, you know, I mean, it's not even how you doing. He says, you wouldn't believe what. How many times have you had alcoholics call you up, you're like, at night, do they ever ask,
no,
am I bothering you? Is this a good time? You know how you can tell when I'm talking to a sober alcoholic? They say things like, is this a good time?
Right.
Do you have time to talk to me? I get a guy calls me at 11 o'clock in the morning and says, you wouldn't believe what just happened to me. You know, he doesn't even know I just came out of surgery, you know, and he doesn't even want to know. You know, I've been on phones with alcoholics and said, guys with 7-10 years, and they've called me up on the phone, and I said, look, I'm in the middle of a meeting. I can't talk now. Call me back in 30 minutes. He says, okay, fine, but listen, I got to talk to you about this one thing. It's like not even a speed bump. They don't, you know, and I understand that because he called me because he wanted. That's alcoholism. That's us to the extreme. Self-will run riot. And you know something? Listen, after you get sober and you're not drinking, you don't even recognize it. You know why you don't recognize it? Because it's the way you normally are. You see alcoholism as drinking. I see alcoholism as acting what you talk to other people about. You know? You see, you call me up and you're always talking about you, and this is happening, that's happening, me, and I'm hurting, why me, and blah, blah, blah. That's alcohol. You might as well be drinking. You're just drinking, you're thinking. You know what I mean? That's the true alcoholism. You're just getting, you know, you're just buying your time until you can drink. That's why it says in the big book, now and then, a guy serious about not drinking says, look better, smell better, have a better time. We laugh at some style he's going to drink because he's not happy about his alcoholism. He's not happy about his sobriety. Guys that are not happy about their sobriety are always talking about themselves. Their little schemes and designs is established on such a footing we become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans, designs. More and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, that's like that restless, irritable, discontented thing. As we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence. His presence. Capital H. His presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. Later on in the big book, you know, I'm not going to go through the whole thing that I go through every single week because I really want to get into the 12 and 12 a little bit. But later on in the big book, of course, it says, and not later on, but in the, and that's why, it says, and there is a solution. It says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we have recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual, in the personal stories, describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. It is a great event when you stop thinking about yourself and you're thinking about other people. It is an incredible event in an alcoholic's life. When he stops thinking about himself, when you stop thinking about yourself, you stop worrying. When you stop thinking about yourself, you're not in fear. When you stop thinking about yourself, you stop yelling at people or getting mad at people. When you stop thinking about yourself, you don't have bad days. You don't even have bad minutes. When you stop thinking about yourself, you know, you're happy about your life. When you stop thinking about yourself, you're helping other people. When you stop thinking about people, people want to be around you. They just like your attitude. When you stop thinking about yourself, you're physically sober all the time, because why would you drink? You got nothing to drink about, and you're worried about other people. I mean, it's an absolute impossibility for an alcoholic without God's help, and this is what this whole book is about. If you look at the promises, that's what it's all about, which around step 9, when the promises start coming in, a new fear, a new happiness. Fear of people, economic insecurity will leave us. Because we're not even thinking about ourselves in the economic, we're thinking about other stuff. We'll see our experiences, we don't worry about our experiences, we see where it can help people. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, and color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. It's all about a relationship. So now we're way past this. We're in the 9th step. So I'm not going to worry about arguments whether we believe in God or not believe in God, because that's been established. That's the deal. He either is or he isn't. In AA, he is. You know, this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. So now I'm going to go through. I want to segue into the 12 and 12 and get up to the ninth step, but I want to get into this part right here. In chapter 6, it says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? I'm going to go through 4 through 8 now until we get to 9. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? It's all about that relationship. It's all about that one thing with God, which is going to solve your problem, isn't it? This is what it says in the big book. It's going to give you something that's going to solve all your problems. Because all your problems is about your selfishness and self-centeredness. Except you don't understand what that selfishness, self-centeredness. You know, the words selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of our problems. It sounds great, but you don't know what that means. Until I tell you about that guy who called me up at 6 o'clock in the morning and said, yeah, that's it. And then you start thinking, say, look, I used to do that. And so, oh, that's what that was. That's what that is. That's what, you know, whenever you're feeling bad, whenever you're feeling down, you got that deal going. That deal is going on. If you're 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 10 months, at the end, you're figuring out, well, why do I feel the way I do? It's because you got that deal going on. Say, I'm not drinking, I know, but you got that deal going on. How do you solve that deal? In AA, we solve it through a relationship with God. Transforms you. You know, you stop having that deal going on. I can't explain it to you. I can just tell you there are guys in here that I've met, that I've run into, that used to be like this, and now they're like that. And this is what happened. Have made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? What have we been trying to get this new attitude? It says, we have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. And discover the... In the book, in the previous chapter, it says to get rid of resentments and fears and all that stuff, it blocks out the sunshine of the Spirit. It blocks out God's. These are all obstacles in our path. So then we go on to the rest of the 12 and 12, just to read a few things in 12 and 12, all having to do with this relationship. Step 6. This is the step that separates the men from the... So now we're moving on. We're moving on in this relationship. We're moving on to get rid of this selfishness and self-centeredness. We're moving on to cement this thing and get it even further and see what it's going to give to us. We want to see what we're going to get something out of this deal. I mean, it is sort of selfish in a way because we're going to get something out of this deal. It says this is a step that separates... I mean, that's why they're reading the promises all the time. We're going to get that out of this deal. This is the step that separates the men from the boys, so declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of A's greatest friends. And I want to make sure I start off right here, because I want to make sure I'm talking to the men in here and the women in here. And I know that's all I'm talking to, because the boys and the girls left last week. This is the step. I know I happen to know they did, but that's okay. This is the step that separates the men from the boys, so declared a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of A's greatest friends. He soon goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step 6 on all his faults without any reservations whatsoever has indeed come a long way spiritually. Okay, here we go. This is the test. This is how you tell the men from the boys in here. I'm sorry, I didn't make this up. Not my rule. If it was my rule, it'd be a different test. Have to do with money or something like that, you know? It's a different test. Here's the test. And is therefore entitled to be called a man or a woman who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own Creator. So I'm going to take it, and this is my verbiage, that I'm dealing with men and women who are trying to grow in the image and likeness of their own Creator, which is perfect. That's what I figure I'm dealing with right here. You know? I mean, you don't have to like that. I figure that's the way it is, because that's what the book says is left over here, you know? And you're trying to grow. And then it goes on to say, step 6, then, if we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, is A's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order to make a beginning of a lifetime job. So this has got to be our attitude. Our lifetime attitude is to be called a man who's sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own Creator. That's our attitude. I mean, you can call me preachy. You know, I mean, it is. I mean, you know, listen, when you're sponsored by a Baptist preacher, you go to church, and I got to watch that. I know I got to watch that. That's why I try to share personal experiences. But the truth is, that's a way, you know, that is, so I really do have to watch that. I don't want to be preachy. I don't want to be, like, talking from the pulpit or anything like that. I share, you know, I got my own things that I struggle with. I'm not trying to say I'm perfect. But neither is it wise, I think, to cancel something out and not hear something because you just put a mark on it saying, well, that's preaching. And so therefore I won't look at it. Because I'm just reading from the 12 and 12. You know, if you don't like it, it's not that you don't like me, you don't like what they're saying in the 12 and 12, because it offends you. Because it's forcing you to go a little bit farther than you want to go. And I understand that. It says, and you know why I understand that? It says, no matter how far we have progressed, desires will always be found which oppose the grace of God. You know, and later on it says, what we really want to do, what all of us, including me, want to do, is settle only for as much perfection as will get us by in life. According, of course, to our various and sundry ideas will get us by. So the difference between the men and the boys is the difference between striving for self-determined objective. Well, I've got my wife, my car, I got a job, I'm doing okay, I've been sober 27 years. You know, I'm a nice guy. I'm always doing the next right thing. You know, at least I'm trying to and everything like that. So that's good enough. Or, that's the boys. Or between that and striving for a self-determined objective and for the perfect objective, which is of God. Now, I can understand if somebody's in here lottie-dottying around and has got 15, 20 years. It's not insane, not necessarily totally happy with what's going on, but, you know, I mean, he's satisfied what the deal is. You know, he's got his thing, and he goes to his 2 or 3 or 5 meetings a week or whatever he's doing. And, you know, he doesn't really, this is okay. That if I say that you should be going for a perfect objective, which is of God, you should be trying to grow in the image and likeness of his creator, I can understand why that would be sort of like an assault on your, I can understand why you would take the attitude, mind your own business, take your own inventory, stay out of my life, who are you to tell me? I can understand that, because if what I'm saying is correct, and what I'm saying is actually in the 12 and 12, if that is really the truth, then you're sitting on your ass. Then you're coasting. Then you need to do more. You understand what I'm saying? It doesn't really matter whether you have 30 years, 35 years, 27 years, anything like that. Then this guy's saying that you're a backslider. You need to do more. And I would be mad at a guy like that, too. I'd want to shut him up, too, because then I'd have to actually do something. You know? So I can understand that deal. It says we need to raise our eyes towards perfection. The moment we say no, never, our minds close against the grace of God. Delay is dangerous. Rebellion may be fatal. This is the exact point at which he abandoned limited objections and moved towards God's will for us. Then in step 7, which talks about humility, which is an absolute necessity, I want to read a couple of things from that having to do with this relationship and what we're doing, which is going to expel, which is going to bring in God's relationship with us, bring in more power, and hopefully expel the selfishness and self-centeredness. Because that's what we want to get at, because if we get rid of the selfishness and self-centeredness, you know, that restless, irritable, and discontented, that's gone. That's going to go. And to the extent that we're able to get rid of this, that's going to go, I don't want to say use the word permanently, although I will, most of the time. Obviously, it's not permanent, because I got on the phone with that guy and I said, Jesus Christ, you're a bastard. You know what I mean? I wasn't like doing well at that moment. You know what I mean? Hey, but let me tell you something. I was doing great about a minute later. Didn't ruin my day. As a matter of fact, 5 minutes later, I said, I've got this meeting lit. It became a meeting for me. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, I decided to use it to talk about myself and what it means to me and why I act that way and why it became useful to me. My experiences became useful to me, became part of my sobriety and part of my story where I could maybe help other people. So seldom did we look at character building as something desirable in itself, something we could like to strive for, whether our instinctual needs were met or not. As long as we place self-reliance first, the genuine reliance upon a higher power was out of the question. The basic ingredient of all humility, a desire in seeking to do God's will, was missing. For us, the process of gaining a new perspective was unbelievably painful. It's painful. It's painful. You know, here's the problem with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what the problem with that is? It works too well too fast. You know, the pain gets you in here. Once you stop drinking, the pain stops. And so the growth stops. It would be nice to think that once alcoholics get in here, they just want to naturally love God, get close to Him, build a relationship, just because they're just good people. But the truth is, alcoholics are not good people. They're selfish, they're self-centered, and whatever that little thing is that God puts in us that gives us some sort of conscience, so we don't call people at 3 o'clock in the morning because we have a buck of our ass, we don't have that deal going on. It's like wiped out, okay? So all we are in Alcoholics Anonymous now are people without that deal going on, you know, who are not drinking. We're still fully capable of calling up at 3 o'clock in the morning if we're pissed off or not. No. Or getting on the phone and saying, you know, you don't understand, or something, or blowing up. So the bottom line is for us, we have to continue to suffer. Part of growing up in AA is suffering. I mean, I don't know, that's the sad news. You got to go through it. As a matter of fact, that's what it says. Our eyes begin to open to an immense value which comes straight out of painful ego puncturing. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. You see, here's what you want to do. You want to tell me about your pain and problems. I want to say, good. See, you want to say, look at all my pain, look at all my problems. I said, good. I hope you get more. More, I said, well, if you get more, where it really hurts and it really kills you, you lose house and everything, one of two things is going to happen. He says, what's that? He says, you're either going to drink or you're not. Right?
Right.
It's only one of two things that can happen. You're either going to drink or you're not. Or you commit suicide, I guess, but most alcoholics don't commit suicide except by accident, you know, an accidental overdose, because we wouldn't want to deprive the world of our presence, you know. But you see, now, of course, if you kill yourself, you're out of the picture anyway, you know. But if you drink, well, then you drink, you know what I mean? And that's the deal. And you know something, there's no way of protecting you against stuff that's going to happen in the world. So if you're looking for an AA program to protect you against cancer, an AA program to protect you against biopsy, an AA program to protect you against the flu, an AA program to protect you against being fired or having one of your children die or anything like that, you can forget it ain't going to happen. But if you go through this stuff and you don't drink, something immensely incredible happens. That character building happens, that perseverance happens, which leads to character building, spiritual maturity, and a stronger bond and faith with God. This isn't new stuff. This is 2,000 years old. All you have to do is read Corinthians. Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. Isn't that true? Isn't that what an alcoholic's all about? You know, they're calling you up on the phone because they want to know how to avoid this, or how to do this, or how to fix this, or how to do anything so that they don't go to jail and they don't do this. And they want to just run away from anything that's painful. We fled from them as from a plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. You don't want to call up somebody and say, well, you're suffering, so what? You don't want to hear that. You want to hang out with your buddies going to say, man, I know how you mean. My wife's a bitch, too. That's what you want. You don't want to call up some sponsor who's going to say, why don't you grow up? Why don't you think about her and the crap that she has to live with dealing with you as a partner? You don't want to deal with that stuff, right? Escape via the bottle was always our solution. Listen, character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it certainly didn't appeal to us. Well, I've got some bad news for you. I know we're not saints, but we're going to get the character building through suffering anyway. It goes with the territory. Then in AA, we looked and we listened. Everywhere we saw failure and misery transformed to humility and priceless assets. The seventh step is where we make a change in our attitudes, which permits us, with humility as our guide, to move out from ourselves and to others and towards, hey, guess what? God. There he is again. He's the one who's going to teach you how to create. Doesn't say when you wake up in the morning, think of him. He's the one who's going to teach you how to create the fellowship you crave. You know, see the relationship. He's all over the place. Steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relationships. Best possible relations with every human being. It's a moving and fascinating adventure. Whenever it talks about an 8, whenever our pencil falters, we can fortify and cheer ourselves by remembering what A experience in this step has meant to others. It is the beginning of the end of isolation from our fellows and from God. There he is again, the guy you're not allowed to talk about in AA meetings. You know, he's only all over the book. He's only all over the 12 and 12, but don't talk about him in the fellowship. It's not allowed. You know, just don't talk about him in AA because it makes people nervous. They'll call you preachy. They won't like it. They'll walk out of meetings. He says, just make sure you don't give them just dilute the thing so everybody can be comfortable and nobody can be upset, uncomfortable. Maybe we don't want anybody uncomfortable. We'd rather just act out and make other people uncomfortable. That's okay. Above all, we should try to be absolutely sure that we are not delaying because we are afraid. For readiness to take full consequences of our past acts and to take responsibility for the well-being of others at the same time is the very spirit of step 9. You know, I can wrap this up in a couple minutes, actually. There's a lot of this, you know, when I first started going to school, I'm a lawyer now, but when I first started going to school, I majored in mathematics. I was going to get my PhD in mathematics and minor in physics. Something called algebraic topology. And when you're dealing with mathematics and physics and things like that, they have things called axioms. When you're dealing with natural laws and things like that, you deal with laws of like gravity, You know, we all know about gravity, you know, it's some sort of force, you know. I mean, this doesn't pull, why doesn't it go up? You know, it goes down because there's a force pulling it down. Electric, you deal with different forces. Now, you can sit around and say, well, why is this and why is that and why is there gravity? And you can go through all that sort of stuff and get into quantum mechanics, but the point is there's no doubt about it that it's there. Well, apparently there are some spiritual forces at work here. There are spiritual laws at work. That's what AA takes advantage of. AA talks about spiritual laws. You know, the Bible talks about spiritual laws. The spiritual laws that AA talks about, even Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob said, these are not new. We didn't invent these things. They didn't come into the business with AA. Even Dr. Young said, this has been going on for thousands of years, here and there, once in a while. These things happen to alcoholics, ideas, emotions, attitudes, with the driving force of these men's lives. Suddenly cast off at one time, they are dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, attitudes. He says, I've tried to do that. I've never been able to do that with an alcoholic of your temperament, the way you are. You know what I mean? And this has been going on for years. There are spiritual laws that are just as strong as laws of gravity. And you know, you can say to me, and this is the alcoholic's cry, why does it have to be this way? Why does it have to be this way? See, that's what we get pissed off. We get pissed at, because here's what we get pissed off at. Since we're not God, it seems to me that the rules as laid down by God is just a little too tough. It's too tough. And so when somebody says, I'll give you an example. There's a line in AA, it's hard to believe, but when I got sober, you know, 27 years ago, they passed a book around. Some of you guys may have read it. It's called Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox, which is on the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, okay? In Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, in this case, he says, if you have a gift and you come to God with a gift, you say, God, here I am, and you know you got some sort of problem with your brother, you've caused some sort of problem, he says, leave your gift right there. I don't want to speak to you. You fix up. Now, that's a real humiliation. You know, it's humiliating to go up to somebody and say, I was wrong. It's humiliating to go up to somebody and say, I screwed up. It's humiliating to go up to somebody and say, I owe you money, here's the money. It's humiliating to go up to somebody, and it's humiliating. What's better is to, you know, forget that son of a bitch. I'll just go straight to God and say, I love you, you're the greatest. And he says, okay, I forgive you, don't worry about that son of a bitch over here. And go, you know, I don't make the rule. You see, that would be my rule. My rule would be, pay off God, like a little God bride, you know what I mean? A little indulgence, you know what I mean? I'm clean and let the son of a bitch burn, you know what I mean? That'd be my... I don't make the rules. The rules in AA, which you're taking rules long ago, is you got some problems that you caused out there, and you want a relationship with him, you've now gotten to the point with all these tools you've gotten, you got to get that right. Why do you get that right? Because it's the rule. It's the rule, it's the AA rule, or else they wouldn't have the ninth step there. Because the ninth step is right before 10 and 11. 11 is all about getting even further and closer, and it's all about getting closer to him. So there wouldn't be anything in, if the whole thing is about him, if the whole thing is about developing a relationship, if the whole thing is your personal relationship with God, then every one of these steps talk about it, then they all must have something to do with cultivating that relationship, or else they wouldn't even be there. They wouldn't even tell you to do this stuff. They wouldn't put a step in there that takes you away from that relationship, would they? They wouldn't throw, okay, let's throw in step 9, this will screw that relationship up, you know? They're doing so well, let's really screw them up now, you know? That 9's got to be in there, because they must need that piece to get even closer to him. And if you don't want to do that deal, that must be because, well, I guess you're one of the boys. I guess you don't want to thoroughly follow our path. So, you know, so the bottom line is, so I got to do these things in order to get closer to him, which is going to spell that other stuff. Now, don't ask me molecule by molecule, line by line, how does this happen? I have no clue. I have no clue. All I know is and I don't have time now, and I'm not going to do like, just like every one of you guys, I had to get to the point where I had to go up to people that I had on the list, that I had to do that deal. I'd go up to my ex-wife. I see my ex-wife, you know, and you know something, the longer I'm sober, I gotta be honest, you know, I made amends to my ex-wife, I went to my ex, now listen, I'm like 3, 4, 5 years sober, I saw my ex-wife, I'm not, you know something, I wish I had the time to tell you the story about me and my ex-wife, only because I would never want anybody in here to think I'm a good guy. You got to trust me when I tell you I'm not a good guy. You got to trust me when I tell you I am not in any way close to a good guy. I crushed the heart of a good woman who bore me a son who never did anything wrong in her life because all I wanted to do was drink and whore around with other women. I am anything but a good guy. And I didn't give a crap how anybody felt, and I hurt a lot of people. Now, let me tell you something. And I'm just going to tell you this. When I was about 4 or 5 years sober, I made amends with my ex-wife. When I say I make amends, I read it through my sponsor, I did the list, and blah, 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 and I did that deal. And I went up to see her, and I talked to her. And I could tell you all about the conversation, what I said to her, and what she said to me. And it all worked out, you know, I don't know whether you want to call it well. I don't know what you call well is. You know, I hugged her, she hugged me, understood whatever the heck happened with that deal. She doesn't hate me, I don't hate her. We have a good relationship, we've had one for years, and blah, blah, blah. You know something? Now, I'm 59 years old. I've been married to another woman for 27 years, you know? And you know what I realize now, 27 years sobriety? I haven't even come close to making amends to her. I haven't even come close. As a matter of fact, it is incredible for me even think that after leaving this woman, after 5 years of marriage, with a three-year-old son, and walking out of her because I wanted to whore around and drink this marriage, you know what I mean? It's incredible for me to think that I can have a 30-minute conversation with her, or an hour conversation, or a three-day conversation with her, and somehow that makes up for anything. Somehow that makes up for anything. And you know how I got that? I got that from further spiritual development, going through things like Bible study, talking to other people, seeing what really divorce really does, what it's really all about, how it hurts. I got that because my sensitivities, because I was willing to learn more about myself. It would be easy for me to let myself off the hook. You know, and say, well, that's enough. I've taken care of that deal. But, you know, it may not be easy to do it this way, to say, you know, I really screwed up. I really need to make amends to people. And to do it may not be, but, you know, it's worth it. See, it's not easy, but it's worth it. You know, because with that close relationships comes an incredible way of life. That's the one. It's whether you want this way of life or not. And it's so great to have older members of Alcoholics Anonymous around. I don't know how anybody would ever do any of this stuff if you didn't have somebody around that was an older member of Alcoholics Anonymous who's been through this deal. Would anybody take this crap on faith? Would anybody do this stuff unless they had somebody around saying, you know, whatever that guy has, I want it or anything? I wouldn't. I sure as hell wouldn't. You know, but this is what this deal is all about. And that's what I like to talk about. I like to talk about the miracles and what's going to happen to you as you get closer to God. That's why you need to do this stuff. So thank you very much.